welcome to the Rookies Podcast, where we're three rookie pastors talking about life, ministry, and anything else we really want to talk about. My name is Rio Taylor, and I'm joined by my two co-hosts, Colin Coffey and Daniel Razor. Guys, we're recording on a Monday. How was your Sunday?
Go for it, Colin. Let's hear it.
Man, mine was good. It was a good time wrapping up the book of Genesis. So we did some distinctives of a mature faith and just looked at what that was portrayed as throughout the book of Genesis, wrapped up. I mean, had to go to Hebrews 11 a little bit. And so just enjoyed preaching through the book of Genesis and enjoyed getting to celebrate a baptism. A dad, you know, baptized his daughter, and just a good Sunday in a lot of ways. I mean, some hard things like any Sunday, but good.
Very similar. We got to celebrate baptism with an 11-year-old girl that came forward probably a month ago wanting to be baptized. We had a conversation about why, and in the process of that, I just learned that she hadn't trusted in Jesus, so we got to have a conversation about the gospel. And then a week later, she came forward saying she wants to trust in Jesus, and so got to lead her to the Lord and then baptized her yesterday. Her dad was, I think, super happy. He also wore a Star Wars shirt for May the 4th be with you. It was just like a big family thing. It was really cool. It was really special, too. It was the granddaughter of a couple that's been in our church for a long time. The lady passed away several months ago, but the whole family just has a life and legacy of the gospel. It was really encouraging to be able to baptize her and to share that with the church family. And then sermon was going well. Did Genesis 15 and 16. It was kind of strange. Maybe you guys can relate to this. You feel like you preach a really strong part of the sermon, and then other parts you get done, you're just like, I'm really not satisfied with that. Like, I really wish I could go back and redo that. I felt that through the second half of the sermon yesterday, and reflecting on, I think it's just because I wanted to, I noticed more things in the text I wish I could have drawn out, but the direction of the sermon didn't take me there. So if I go back and preach it different, I probably would do a couple things different, but overall I'm pretty satisfied. I had one lady tell me it was in my top 10, and I asked her, did we listen to the same sermon? Because I don't know about that, but I was very appreciative, very thankful.
Yeah, we lost Colin, by the way. He'll jump back in here in a moment. But apparently in Inola, the Wi-Fi is terrible right now. Apparently the only good Wi-Fi for this podcast is found in Grayson, Kentucky. Anyway, Daniel, remind me, you're a week behind me in Genesis, which means you did 15 and 16?
Yeah, 15 and 16, so the covenant, and then Sarai and Hagar. Yeah.
Which, can we just talk about how, and I think Colin said this best in his sermon, Abram's a dirtbag. When, you know, his wife says, hey, go sleep with my servant girl. And he goes, okay, I will. Yep.
Reluctantly.
Really putting him out there.
He's a dirtbag more than once in the book, too.
So here's the thing. Yeah. Colin, you've preached this. Daniel, you're going to preach this week. Maybe it's Mother's Day, so I don't know what you're preaching. But in Genesis 18, Sarah's statement that she makes when she hears God say that she's going to be pregnant, have a child in a year, is one of the most awkward things. Not in terms of awkward in translation. It's awkward in meaning. Mm-hmm. Because, and I had to talk about it because it's a weird phrase. She says, when she hears this, she laughs and says, after I am worn out and my Lord is old, shall I have pleasure? It's a weird phrase. But it means, here's what it means for those of you listening. It means I'm worn out, which is a phrase only used of old sandals that cannot be worn again in the Old Testament. I'm worn out. The second phrase in Hebrew is technically shall I have pleasure, meaning I don't enjoy the process of making babies, and my Lord is old, meaning my husband's not helping the matter. So that was fun to explain yesterday, and I did. But I moved on quickly not to dwell on it. And it was like that slow realization when people started laughing. They're like, oh, that's what that means. But I was moving on past it. I was like, I'm not dwelling on this. I'm not going to dwell on it. We're just going to talk about it because Sarah, that's her statement of she's not wrestling with doubt. She full on doubts. So Daniel, get ready. That was fun. Colin, did you handle it that way when you preached it?
I think I just told people, I think you know what this means. And moved on.
And that was it.
And I didn't. I did not delve into the grammar of her doubt.
I did.
I love that you did.
Well, right. I thought it was important because it highlights just how she gave up. Like, she's like, this is not happening. And my funny part, though, is, why did you say it? I didn't say it. No, but you did. Like, she's arguing with God.
Yeah.
But anyway, but speaking of yesterday, so Daniel, I'm sure it was a good sermon, but I get what you mean. Colin, you're done with Genesis now, right?
I mean, I'll probably preach it again, but yeah, for right now, I'm done.
Okay. I mean, like, you finished the books, what I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm finished. Okay. No, I was just teasing you. But yeah, we're finished. We're going to do, I'm going to preach a Mother's Day sermon, actually. And then spend a couple weeks on the Nicene Creed, 1500 years of the Nicene Creed. And then we'll be in 1 John, how to have complete joy.
That's good.
What's the Nicene Creed?
Be quiet. Be quiet, Rio.
Hey, all I know is worth the time, man. All I know is the Baptist Faith and Message 2000. That's good enough for Jesus, good enough for me.
Hey, Malcolm Yarnell and others want to add the Nicene Creed to our document, which it's great. I love the Nicene Creed. I don't think you should add a creed to an amendable document. Somebody said that, and I agree with it.
That's where I'm at. I mean, I 100% for the Nicene Creed, and, you know, it'd be a great addition. It's just being in an amendable document's maybe not the smartest move.
Maybe just say we affirm the Nicene Creed.
Yeah, but hey, people smarter than us are arguing for its addition. So, I mean, there you go.
They're different intelligences, Rio, and different wisdom.
Yeah, but, you know, Matt Emerson, who am I to disagree with him?
Have you ever heard of the absent-minded professor? Don't at me, Matt.
Bold move to assume he listens to our podcast.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. He doesn't.
But anyway, well, hey, one thing I wanted to talk to you guys about, because I know we're going to release this episode this month, and then for the summer, we're only going to do about one episode a month, and then we'll pick back up every other week in August. But yesterday, the Lord just really kind of stirred my heart with something that I've been feeling for a bit, but yesterday was almost like it was clear in my mind. And I want to talk about it for a bit with you guys, see what you think. But a few months ago, I had a member of our church, good guy, great guy, he said that he loves the way I preach because he said, Rio gets up there and says, you suck and here's why. And I need that. And I'm like, that's not how I want people to hear my preaching. I don't want them to think they walk away. Well, I suck. I need to do better. That's the opposite of what I want. And so I've kind of over the past few months changed my delivery style a bit. And yesterday, the second half of my sermon was not at all what I planned on it being. There were some things that I put in the outline that ended up getting preached, but it was more like preaching to myself and portraying God as a gracious father and how the church needs to be have a gracious culture that celebrates more than we critique. And I don't know if it's just me. I'm prone to say, this is what we're doing wrong. We need to fix it. But grace is, you know, the gospel of grace. We're to draw people in. So this might be a broad question. I'm working through this. What have you guys done, or what are you doing, or what would you like to do in your church to establish a culture of grace in your discipleship, not a culture of guilt, which I feel like guilt is kind of the driving motivator in a lot of our churches?
Yeah, I do think guilt is the driving motivator in a lot of churches. And even if it's not explicitly put there, I think people often are used to being motivated by guilt. Their parenting style may be motivated by guilt, or their, you know, parents, coaches, authority figures in their life, boss, clients. Guilt is, you know, a pretty potent thing. But it's the Lord's kindness that motivates us towards repentance. And I think in our preaching, we should model an attitude of grace. And I even had to, you know, like you're talking about, kind of adjust my sermon on the fly, because at the end, I tried to balance the distinctives of mature faith that I talked about with the need for grace. Because as mature as you are, you'll never be as mature as Jesus, and you'll never be able to meet that bar of perfection that merits any sort of salvation. And I'd use like Amy Carmichael, who served for 55 years on the field without a furlough. And I just kind of said, hey, you don't have to be Amy Carmichael to get into heaven. You know, 55 years without a water break is not how you get in. It's through the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ. And Jared Wilson has that phrase that rattles around in my brain and comes out all the time, that what you win people with, you win them to. And guilt's powerful. You can guilt people into doing a lot of things, but then you've won them to a culture and a motivation that's anti-gospel in a lot of ways. You have to preach the indicatives and the imperatives, and you have to model it yourself in the way that you think, because even if you preach it, sometimes I struggle, and you guys speak into this. Do you struggle as a pastor with like guilt being the motivation for why you do things, and even just letting yourself off the hook sometimes?
Well, with that, I mean, 100%. I mean, I think you guys know this. Imposter syndrome is something every pastor wrestles with, because we know how sinful we are, and yet God has called us to lead his people. And I feel like if we're in our right space and humility, we shouldn't think that, well, of course I'm the better Christian than everybody else here. So yeah, guilt's a huge motivator. I mean, there have been times where I feel guilty for not, like, I'll get working on something and they're like, oh, I need to pray. Like, not like I need to pray because I haven't sought the Lord, but oh man, this sermon's going to stink because I haven't prayed yet. It's almost like I feel bad. And I'm like, I'm asking God for forgiveness that I started sermon prep for 2 minutes without praying. And then I wonder, like, is this whole thing just me now? And the guilt in other areas too is, well, I've got to do this and I got to do this. And the demands of a pastor mean I feel guilty in other areas too. So one thing, like this morning, my allergies are killing me. So if last week I made a joke to my church that I swapped Oklahoma tornadoes for Kentucky allergies, and I don't know which one's more destructive. But with that, my goal was, like, every Monday, I want to wake up at 5:30. I want to go do my quiet time. I want to go to the gym. I want to be in a good rhythm. It's kind of my hope. And so my alarm was set. All 16 alarms to wake me up were set. And in the middle of the night, I started coughing, getting nasally, didn't sleep well. So then I didn't wake up at 5:30. I slept in. I got to the office and I was going to jump into prep, but I felt guilty. Like, oh no, I got to do my quiet time first. Otherwise it's a wasted day, versus, hey, no, I want to spend time with the Lord. Does that make sense? Like, it was more of I had to correct myself, going, no, I shouldn't do this because I feel guilty. I should do this because I want to spend time with God before I do the work God's called me to. So for me, like, guilt is often the reason I find myself doing a lot. But recently I've noticed just how prevalent that is, and I'm trying to, like, correct it when I see it. I don't know. Does that make any sense? Is that kind of what you're asking there?
Yeah, I think that's accurate. And definitely something I feel. Daniel, we talked today with somebody who quoted the Michigan State survey or study that said basically pastors have like 65, like, competencies that are basically expected of them. And so that's more than a ER doc. And that's kind of a burdensome expectation that a lot of churches have for their pastors. That's unrealistic. Not everybody's going to be good at everything. Obviously we're going to try and be excellent. We're not talking about that, but there's a weight to pastoring that's often not equitably placed on other folks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, I mean, what comes to mind in that idea, just the responsibility as a pastor, and then Rio, as you said, just feeling the guilt of responsibility to do something like a quiet time. I remember what Herschel York, when he was preaching the Sermon on the Mount, like in Matthew 6, talking about like fasting, giving, and prayer. He talked about, like, in each of those sermons, the blessing of the thing is the doing of the thing. And so the blessing that we get from praying to the Lord is not that we're going to be blessed because we prayed, but the prayer itself is the Lord's blessing to us. And I think that that ought to be our mindset when it comes to the responsibilities. And maybe we don't use the word responsibilities of a believer when it comes to things like our prayer life or our quiet time, like they're responsibilities, but they're also blessings. Like we get to open our Bible and learn about the Lord. We get to come to Him in prayer. We get to fast. We get to do these things. And that thing is the blessing. But I wonder if the way in which we come to the cross at our salvation changes our perspective on all the idea of guilt and grace in church culture. I remember having this conversation with one of my youth pastors years and years ago about when you share the gospel, are you calling people to escape from hell or go to heaven? And I think very often in, I mean, I'm just thinking like typical revivals, it's a turn or burn sermon. Like you're getting out of hell. That's the big thing. And you're getting out of hell. So you don't want to go to hell. You can't do this. You can't do this. You can't do this. And so there's like a layer of guilt that is laid upon the listener. And when you come to the gospel, you come to the gospel with a, I can't do this stuff. And so when you naturally do that stuff, you find guilt. And I just wonder, like, I'm thinking my own culture, as you kind of ask this question, Rio, like, do I share the gospel in a way that is an escape from sin and like a rescue from that? And so it's a don't do this stuff, or do I share it in a way that is also, you've been seated in the heavenly places. And so there's a grace there that you are this. And I just kind of think in my own, and I don't have a good answer right now, but I just wonder how I share the gospel and how my church hears how I talk about the Christian life.
Now that makes sense. I got to talk to one of my members this morning at our local coffee shop. So Becca, if you're hearing, shout out. But I got to talk to her for a bit, and Becca's, you know, we're close in age, and we were talking about church culture, because I brought that up, that I've been wrestling with. I don't want to be a pastor that guilts people into following Jesus. I want to be a pastor that helps cultivate this culture of grace and celebration. Like, that's kind of where my heart's at right now, and which I'm thankful for. But she brought up, and I'm very thankful for this, how the culture of the past has been turn or burn. If you're a good Christian, you don't do these things. And it's been less about why Jesus is worthy of our complete devotion. And it's been less about that and more about if you do these things, you're a bad person. So for example, I mean, the cultural deal of if you have a tattoo, you're obviously not a Christian. If you watch Harry Potter, you're obviously not a serious Christian. And there are, these are the, all these cultural expectations that people put on what it means to be a Christian versus somebody who's in love with Jesus mm-hmm. and somebody who's following Jesus and somebody who clings to Jesus and someone who abides in Jesus. And part of just kind of, as I'm working through this, how do we build this grace culture? And this is what I've been thinking about, is we have to learn to celebrate what seems insignificant to us. So I've been saved for 18 years at this point. Actually, yeah, next month will be 18 years. And when I started in my walk with Jesus, I didn't read the Bible consistently. Prayer was weird to me, and I just knew I needed to go to church. I had good men who invested in me, but I was having an issue with why do I do these things. And then when I was 17, 4 years after I'm saved, I finally read through the Bible in a year. And then every year, that's just been my practice, to read through the Bible in a year, or to read through the New Testament in a year, or the Old Testament in a year. So in a way, doing that for so long, I've even noticed that I had a new Christian come up to me a few weeks ago, and this is kind of what broke me and made me realize something's wrong. He said, Pastor Rio, I've been reading the Bible, and he's been saved like for a couple of weeks, got baptized. And I said, oh, that's cool, man. Like, I didn't say anything wrong, but I should have said, man, that's awesome, and celebrated with him that he did this, because I celebrated his baptism. I celebrated when he trusted in Christ. But why don't we celebrate the baby steps? You know, my son, Rhett, our youngest son, took his first steps last week. He took two steps, and Renee and I were just over the moon excited. Is that not how we're to be with a baby Christian every time they take a step? And even when they're not baby Christians, why is there such a culture of only celebrating these huge moments like a call to ministry or baptism? Why don't we celebrate publicly and celebrate, hey, so-and-so went and shared their faith this week? Hey, so-and-so did this. And I'm not saying we have to do that probably from the stage. I'm saying, should that not be a part of our culture where we learn to celebrate, not just say, oh, that's cool. And one of the things in the sermon yesterday the Lord used to convict me is how often when a new Christian says, I've done this, And we say, well, you're not supposed to do it that way. And that's kind of what got me. But I don't, I don't want to ramble. Colin, I know you have something you want to say to that because you unmuted yourself.
Yeah. I do think there's two thoughts that came into mind as you were talking. One of them was from Tripp, and one of them was from Wilson. And, you know, he has this bit where he says that so much of our church culture is about behavior modification, not heart transformation. And Tripp basically takes that same idea applied to parenting in his book on parenting with the 12 kind of principles, and teaches that you need to be instructing your children on what has their heart, like what's controlling their heart, where their affections lie. And that needs to be behind everything that we do in the church is what has your heart. And Dr. Helen Roosevelt one time, which if you're not familiar with Helen Roosevelt and her story, I mean, just go look it up. She's experienced the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. People talk to her and ask her this question. Well, you know, Mark, you know, can I watch this TV show? Can I read that book? Can I do this? And her response is basically, is Jesus enough? Is Jesus enough for you? And initially when I heard that, I was like, I think that's kind of trite and simple, but really it is a question of affections, that if Jesus is enough, then whatever he says, you do it. And you're not worried about missing out on something. And it's kind of that positive sobriety aspect of living where you are pointed in a different direction. And so you're so faithfully pursuing Christ and his glory and enjoying him that the difficulties you have with temptation and sin begin to fade away because your energy is directed towards holiness and the one who is holy. And I think that's where we've got to get is our affections have to be pointed towards God. And we have to be desiring him and just overwhelmed by his grace to the point that we aren't thinking about, like you said, Rio, not doing things. We're just so much more concerned about pleasing the Lord. And that's where, you know, grace begins to be real because you're not worried about, you know, this or that behavior as much as you are pleasing the Lord. And I mean, that probably sounds like a smallish change, but I think those two priorities are worlds apart. If you're worried about pleasing the Lord, that's far different from doing the right things. I mean, I think a moralist can do the right things. A Buddhist, a Muslim can do the right things, but none of those people can please the Lord as a Christian can. And the Bible just calls us to some of that radical heart and mind transformation. And when we communicate that to other people, I think it's tremendously freeing. It's like a breath of fresh air that you're not, you know, hey, I'm going to set you up with an accountability program and you're going to text me every single morning. And that, I mean, that may be part of some people's lives, but like, and need to be part of their faith journey. But most of the time it just needs to be praying for them, encouraging them and pointing them to Jesus so that they experience grace from him. Because when we start to give the message that I need to check in on your behavior all the time, then that's what we really care about is your behavior more than your heart. And the heart has to change. Behavior is always downstream of the heart and our motivations, and the gospel is what changes that.
So in my discipleship group right now, we're reading the Bible in a year, and I've told them this group is more accountability based than Bible study based, because you got to have every element, I think, in your church, your fellowship, accountability, and Bible study. But one thing we did, we would say, okay, hey, let's do accountability. And we'd typically be like, what's the stupidest thing you've done this week? And you know, that's funny. You know, we're guys, haha, you know, whatever. But I even started to think even that language is we're only interested in what you've done wrong. And so what we're changing it to this week, and I talked to a couple of my guys already. I said, hey, we're not dealing with what's the stupidest thing you've done. Hey, I want to hear your high for the week and your low for the week. I want to hear something that we can celebrate together, and I want to hear something that we can all pray together with and help each other with. And kind of my thought is we either get people on two ends of the spectrum where they're either the super legalistic, guilt, shame, this like behavioral modification versus, and then you get the other side, which is it's all grace, behavior doesn't matter, you're covered. And, you know, we've seen that in some pastors we've seen here who it's all about grace, who cares about obedience, you know, grace, grace, grace. And it's like, well, grace is meant to motivate true obedience and grace is a foundation for it. And with all that, I feel like we go to one or two ends of the spectrum and it's walking in the middle of that where there are commands from God of what we're to do, but they're to be motivated by a grace and devotion, not by a guilt and a worry. If that's, I don't know. That's kind of where I've been at with that here recently. And I think this celebration culture of we don't just want to know what you're doing wrong. We also want to know what's going well. And we want to know where your victory's at just as much as we want to know where your defeats. And I feel like that culture of celebration, grace, we're here for you at your low, we're going to celebrate with you at your highs, is what, not only what are we supposed to be, but it's also the solution to the burnout problem that we're seeing in churches. And again, I'm not speaking like we're doing this perfectly. This is, again, something the Lord has been really crystallizing for me here recently, is it's hard to be burned out when you're celebrating. It's easy to be burned out when you're just going through the motions.
And I think part of the difficulty that we have as pastors is it can't just be like a one-time deal, but it has to be a whole culture change of the church. And as the one who is shepherding the church, it kind of lies on us to help change that culture. And I think you brought up one of the really good points is how some small steps we can take to change that culture is instead of asking like your accountability group or whatever you have, like, did you read your Bible today? Like a behavior type thing. Change the question to like, what did Jesus teach you today? And so it moves into more of a relationship with Christ and a learning that also has the implication of Bible reading. And it's a slow process because it's only going to be like you and maybe three or four others in your accountability group. But as that grows, it slowly changes the culture. And I think that's what we really want, is not just a couple people in the church that are living in grace and joy and celebrating things, but eventually the whole church is celebrating these. And I think that's whenever you feel like you've done something as a pastor, whenever you're not the only one doing it, but you can see other people in your church celebrating in the hallways or after the service or whatever. Like, that's some of my biggest joys as a pastor, is seeing people love one another when I'm not involved. And that's one of the great joys of just shepherding people. And I think that helping create that culture in a few and then encourage them to let it grow is what will eventually make a big difference in the heart of the church and the heart of the people. So.
Yeah,
I think guys, too. What you're saying is helpful, both of you guys, and dovetailing with it is, I think we were all at that pastors' meeting in Oklahoma where we were talking about a couple different subjects over several meetings. But one pastor at a point kind of got up and said, "Hey, there's a positive aspect that we're kind of missing in our conversation," and just encouraged us to lean into the positive enjoyment of God in all of life. And I think that is the all-encompassing vision of the New Testament and the gospel, that you can enjoy God and glorify Him in everything. And so when the Christian life gets boiled down to Bible reading and memorization and, you know, meeting with people one-on-one for discipleship and sharing the gospel and doing personal evangelism, it's an impoverished view of the gospel and enjoying God and the Christian life, because motherhood is gospel centered, right? Your job ought to be centered on the gospel and how you're living out the enjoyment of God and the glorifying of God in your vocation. There's few books that have impacted me and been as beneficial to me in my work life, but also I think just to other people that are not pastors, as Tim Keller's Every Good Endeavor. And just that whole book lays out how the gospel ought to impact every area of life. And that's I think a culture of grace too, that the gospel extends its little fingers into everything.
Yeah. And, you know, ultimately in the day, that's what we want. We want gospel-centered churches, gospel-centered lives, and gospel-centered everything. And the gospel is a gospel of grace. Even it says it about itself. But, well, I appreciate you guys walking through this with me. And again, this is one of those deals where, you know, we want to grow in this. You know, in order to grow in grace, you also got to acknowledge your weakness. So it's not so much that we're saying, here's what we're doing well, and we got to quit doing this. It's also, no, we need to, like, we have these tendencies. Like me, I have a tendency to be a fighter, which means when there's a disagreement, like, confrontation doesn't scare me, which in a way, like, is a pro and a con. So I find myself a lot being more guilt and I want to prove my point versus, hey, I want to be your coach and graciously lead you to see this in Christ. So I just, you know, I think churches would be better served with grace being the currency and the language we use versus guilt and shame, which tends to be the norm. Daniel, what you got?
No, just, I mean, I agree. And I think it begins with this realization that we do have a tendency to be with guilt and responsibility and the burden of the Christian life rather than the joy of the Christian life. And I think whenever pastors, whenever we begin to live in that freedom of Christ and the joy that it is to read our Bible, to spend time in prayer, we begin to see that in others and celebrate it. I think that's what can make a church feel alive more than just a responsibility you go to every Sunday. So.
Well, guys, this has been fun to talk about. I know that it's always fun when we get together and chat with one another. And we will have more stuff to talk about in June when we all three go to the annual meeting together. So that'll be a blast. We'll release an episode when we get done with that, kind of recap it, talk about things we liked, and, you know, be gracious in the things we didn't like, which we'll probably get more views if we just did an episode of the things we didn't like.
That's very true.
But anyway, we hope you all have a good summer. We know VBS and camps are coming up, and so we'll be praying for you. We also want to, I want to say this, if you have a particular prayer request for your church this summer, feel free to email Daniel and we'll pray for you guys. We'll let you, you know, we'll keep up with you and make sure you're doing good, but, you know, appreciate the work you all do. If you're a pastor listening, you know, we're for you and we hope this has encouraged you and we will talk to you all in June. Give us a like and subscribe on all our social media platforms and hopefully we will talk to you in another month. Daniel, Colin, you got anything?
Nope.
We will pray for you by AI bot. So we will actually pray for you.
We will actually use our words to pray for you, not ChatGPT.
That's right. Bye, everybody.
All right, guys. Well, hey, I'll see y'all later. Talk to you later.